Welcome back to the CBMW podcast, your weekly inoculation against progressive self-expressionism. We're here to help you keep your biblical immune system ready to wage war on every ideological virus. I am your host, Jonathan Swan, the executive editor of ICON, a journal for biblical anthropology. I'm joined by Denny Burke, the president of CBMW, and Colin Smothers, the executive director of CBMW. Brothers, welcome back to the show.
Greetings. Great to be back. I just want to go on record and say my favorite part of the podcast is John's intro. So well done this week, brother.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, thank you. Hey, guys, we've got great news. The internet has informed me that Second Lady of the United States, Usha Vance, is expecting her fourth child with J.D. Vance. How about that?
Great news. Fantastic news. I saw the same, and I think it is true. As a matter of historical record, this is the first sitting Second Lady of the United States ever to be pregnant.
Look at that. Making having children great again.
And she's 40. I think she just turned 40 in January this month.
Impressive. Impressive. It's historic. Perhaps there's some symbolic significance given JD's messaging the last year. Colin, you have a column coming out in the next few days, we hope, talking about fertility. Could you give us a taste of that, explaining sort of what is the state of fertility around the world?
Yeah, I saw a slate of articles coming out this past week and the week before about fertility, not just in this country, but really around the world. I mean, headlines, you might have seen the same. China, for the last 4 years, so 4 years running now, has experienced more people dying than being born in that country. I mean, think about that. What that means is literally your population is declining. Japan has been in that death spiral. Dr. Moeller often talks about it on his podcast, The Briefing, for decades, really. A lot of Asian countries, Singapore, Taiwan, are in the same boat, South Korea, with birth rates well below replacement rate. So, you know, for those that don't study these things, replacement rate for a population for birth is 2.1. What that means is every person has to have a person and their partner 2.1 children in order for that population to just hold steady, to be to maintain. What that means is the average American family or average family in a country has to be at least two. Okay. So think about that when you're thinking about the people that you know that have kids or don't have kids or whatever. Anyway, the birth rate for many of these Asian countries is hovering at one or under. So half of the replacement rate. Another story came out that in the United Kingdom and Great Britain, the number of abortions is topping north of 300,000, while their number of births is under 600,000 for the past couple years. What that means is you could have a convergence of those numbers even within the decade, that more babies would be aborted in that country than born. That's a crazy statistic. And then in this country, our birth rate in America is hovering at about 1.6. It's the lowest it's ever been. Again, that's well below the 2.1 replacement rate needed to just hold steady on the population. So alarming statistics all across the globe. And the point of the article is this needs to be of national concern, of national interest. And this administration, I believe, needs to start doing more.
Colin, you said in your article that it's like a death spiral in terms of the we're not meeting replacement rate. We're well below that. It's a death spiral. And you say that we may not be able to pull out of it, or some of these nations may not be able to pull out of it. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, I mean, just do the math. If you have fewer people having children, especially underneath that birth rate, the 2.1 replacement rate, then the next generation is fewer people. And if that continues to hold, that birth rate continues to hold, you can see how the numbers exponentially decrease very, very quickly. So within, 50 years' time, 100 years' time, you can literally have your population within, potentially someone's lifetime. And many people are looking at
– you're saying you can't reverse it. Like, you can reverse it in 50 years, but you can't I mean, it could take 50 years to half your population, but you can't replace it in 50 years. If, like, let's say the birth rate went up.
That's right. Let's say nothing changes for the next 50 years. Then all of a sudden, everybody finally got the memo and everybody started having four or five kids. Well, the numbers just don't work for a decimated population like that to be able to replace in the same way that that the population declines that quickly. And so what happens is these countries, and Japan is facing this. I mean, I saw a story just this morning from South Korea that the government is trying to do everything within their power to the point where they are paying people. I don't think I'm making this up. At least this story told me this. They're paying people to go on dates. They're subsidizing marriage where they get money to get married. And then if you form a household, you get all kinds of money, all kinds of benefits from the government, because governments, at least these East Asian governments, are realizing if nothing changes, we don't have a future. We don't have a population in 50, 100 years.
You mentioned something in your article about what the consequences of this are. A lot of people have been laboring under this, I don't know, this illusion that human beings covering and populating the earth is some kind of a cancer on the earth, and that there's overpopulation and we need to get all of these people who are destroying the environment, and, you know, we need to have less of them here, which is the opposite of like a biblical perspective, which says that, you know, the proliferation of human beings across the face of the earth is a part of the mandate from creation. It's a part of what blesses the earth when we are fruitful and multiply and subdue the earth. But there's this other ideology out there. It's a very secular ideology that says, no, humans are the scourge on the planet and we need to have less of them. So tell me in practical terms what it is. Like, if you have a declining population, what are the practical implications for that nation, for that culture?
Yeah, I mean, going back to the nation of Japan, this is something they're experiencing right now, where you think about an aging population who is now retiring out of the workforce. There literally are not people to replace those jobs. These people, as they get older, they're having to go into care facilities to be able to be cared for by younger, more able-bodied people. They don't have people enough to be able to care for the aging population. So we're talking about economic disaster. We're talking about national security disaster. I mean, think about what it takes to defend borders, what it takes to sum up a national defense. It takes young, healthy people, particularly men. If you don't have that, not only working in, you know, the jobs in your country, but able to man these posts, these national defense posts, you're talking about demographic suicide. And I don't think that people appreciate this. At least the trends continue to tick down. People are not waking up to the fact that it's not just, you know, somebody else can have the children and I can reap the benefits of, you know, my sort of expressive individualist life, because they're going to, you know, kind of foot the economic bill, or, you know, they're going to man the grocery checkout line or whatever it is, their kids. Well, eventually, again, you do the math, you do the numbers, there's nobody left to make those replacements. There's nobody left to run the economy. There's nobody left to stock the shelves, these kinds of things. And so your selfish decision to delay or to forgo completely having children, you don't get to outrun that. It actually eventually catches up with you too. If this is the trend, if this is the what happens on scale in a country, in a nation.
You know, I saw that China, as you mentioned, they're waking up to this. Like, they know that there's a death spiral, and that they know that this is going to eviscerate their country if they let this go. And so they've actually had a kind of 180 on their old one child policy. They were one of the main purveyors of fertility suppression, and even, you know, killing babies, you know, through abortion. Or so they presided over this kind of false ideology for a long time, but it looks like now they're kind of waking up to it. And I just read a story in the online. There's more than one story about this, but that China is actually taxing birth control methods now. So they're 13% tax. It's been because they've been trying to get people to suppress their fertility for so long. It was always this tax-free thing. Well, now they're trying to make it more expensive. They haven't banned it yet. I mean, I don't know. I mean, they're a country of central planning, right? They have their plans, and they hand it down to the country what they're supposed to do, even if it goes against nature. But right now they're just, you know, they're taxing it. I don't think that's going to work. If you eviscerate a marriage culture, I don't think that just taxing birth control methods is going to fix it, even if you are making it more cumbersome. So, you know, it's interesting that a number of these countries are kind of figuring this out. I don't know if people are figuring it out here. I mean, you've got figures like Elon Musk, who is really trying to make a big deal out of this and trying to tell everybody this is the biggest issue facing our country right now, is that we may not be replacing our population, which means economic disaster. It means weakening our military abilities. And it's across the board is going to be a disaster. Like, he's one of the main figures I hear talking about it. So what do you think about that? I mean, where are we on that in our country?
Yeah, I'd love to hear John's thoughts on it. But one of the main things, like you mentioned in the opening, from the Trump administration coming into the second term was Donald Trump, and it's particularly J.D. Vance, really seemed to have their finger on this pulse coming in with the Project 2025. Of course, you know, they ended up distancing themselves from that eventually. But, you know, conservative think tanks have been all over this for a long time, saying if we don't do something and do something fast, we do enter that death spiral where more people are dying than being born every single year. And so there were lots of policies that were proposed, you know, make very significant the child tax credit, you know, double it, triple it, whatever it is, incentivize, you know, parents not only having children, but staying home with their children, incentivize births within wedlock, because that is the environment that's proven to be able to nourish and nurture the next generation. And what we have seen instead is, I think, the most prominent policy out of this White House has been the IVF policy, or sort of reducing the barriers, reducing cost to IVF. The problem with that is that's disconnected from marriage. From family. And there's all kinds of controversy, obviously pro-life controversy surrounding that procedure, including surrogacy and the ethical implications there. So more needs to be done. We haven't woken up to it. You just see that number 1.6. Next year could be 1.5. And years on. So we need to turn this ship around and quickly.
You know, oh, I'm sorry, John, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, compared to some of these Asian nations, we do have the benefit in America of having more of a Christian worldview presence, right? And so you can try to motivate your people to get married and have children because of an impending disaster, like you guys have mentioned some of the policies that they're trying to initiate. I just wonder how you said, Denny, I don't know if it's working. Maybe because that's a really hard motivator. You know, that's not like, it's not an effective motivator. Whereas if the Christians in our nation can continue to rise up and actually explain how these issues relate to the biblical worldview and how this is actually, all these things are in line with how we were created. The reason why we're in this disaster area is because we've rejected God, we've rejected his word, and we've rejected his design, and these are just the inevitable consequences. So I feel a little bit more optimistic about where we are and how we can actually change the tide compared to some of these other nations.
I guess the one thing that troubles me even on our side though is just the raw numbers that we're, you know, 1.6 replacement rate. But, you know, When it seems like our major pronatalist voice, celebrity voice out there is Elon Musk. Mm-hmm. And Elon Musk is trying to do his contribution by having 14 children with four different women.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, and so in other words, it's not a return to, you know, anything that you and I would recognize as a Christian framework for forming and rearing families, you know, where there's one man and one woman in a covenant of marriage, which is the only and the best stable place to raise a child. Mm-hmm. So if you're just breeding like, you know, elephants or dinosaurs, that's not going to cut it either, because you're going to end up with a lot of fatherlessness. You're going to end up with broken families. We're not animals. Okay. We're human beings. And so, you know, I do think you're correct though, that we do have still the residue, at least, of a Christian civilization here. And so there still is a Christian presence here. It just feels like sometimes it's diminishing so much. Right. And so I do think we have our work cut out for us. I think we need to be saying, you know, groups like us, you know, CBMW, we're standing for the family. We're standing for men and women coming together in the covenant of marriage. Mm-hmm. And so we do need to recast that vision for people to have a vision for what marriage is, what it's supposed to be, what its possibilities are, what its blessings are. So, you know, I want that to spread as the gospel spreads, you know, but I also want it to spread, you know, even beyond where the gospel spreads, you know, in people's hearts, because our civilization is just going to need that as a common grace feature. So, but I just look at all the decades of undoing we've done in this area. Mm-hmm. And it's just we got our work cut out for us, because people have catechized themselves into this idea that having children is a lifestyle choice. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, sex and marriage don't necessarily go together. You can, through contraception and other means, you can delay children indefinitely, which means you can delay marriage indefinitely, and you just have all these sexual partners. And so you have a ton of people in our culture who spend the better part of their 20s hooking up and never marrying and trying not to have children and suppressing their fertility. So you want to know how we get to 1.6 replacement rate. That's a part of it.
Yep.
And so another part of it is the evisceration of manhood and the abandoning of responsibility for family and for the women that you impregnate. You know, all of those things are, you know, pathological in our culture, and they have to be reversed.
Hey, I have one more question. Colin, at the end of your article, which we hope people will be able to see here in the next few days, you mention Marxism. And, you know, there are some folks who don't like that we would make Marx such a boogeyman. But to be honest with you, I'm kind of at the point now where I don't think we can make Marx a big enough boogeyman. Yeah. How does Marx and his philosophy stand behind what we're experiencing now?
Yeah, I think Marx is just one further instance of man's rebellion against God, but he's a big, outsized one. He hated God. He wasn't just an atheist. He hated God, you know, there is no God and I hate him kind of attitude. Mm-hmm. He hated the natural family. He militated against, he was a terrible father himself, but he militated against the natural family. He had this, you know, hang up on capital and property and all these things. And he saw one of the main perpetuating institutions of what he thought was inequality was the family, was marriage. So there's a reason why the Bolshevik Revolution, the Russians, you know, adopt this ideology into their country. And one of the first reforms they institute is no-fault marriage and free abortions. This is a Marxist ideology to
no-fault marriage?
No-fault divorce. I'm sorry.
Okay. Yeah.
Did I say no-fault marriage?
That's a big difference.
That is a big difference. No-fault divorce and free abortions. And the reason is because you break up the family. Now you're not talking about you know, nuclear families. You're talking to individuals, cogs in the machine, relating individually to the state. And that was the goal. That was the aim for Marxist utopia. And that is what we're seeing, I think, downstream. That is many of the ideas that animate second, third, fourth wave feminism. That's many of the ideas that animated many of our academic halls that were preaching things like humanity is a scourge, you know, marriage is patriarchal and oppressive, and all these things. You can trace almost to a line, these ideas downstream from Marx. And so at the end of the day, what I would say is we're seeing the ill effects of social engineering. China tried social engineering with their one-child policy. It was a disaster. Not only did they get into this death spiral, but families preferred to have boys rather than girls. And so you have a mismatch. Even if everything went back to normal today, you have more boys, men in that country than women. There's not enough partners. Yeah, there's not enough partners for these men, even if they wanted to just tomorrow begin to marry and have children. The same thing happened in this country, but it was from not necessarily from a governmental standpoint, but from a cultural standpoint, from the academy. You know, who needs marriage? Children are an accessory, a capstone to, you know, a life, not something that you pursue early on and young. So social engineering has been a disaster. What we need is we need cultural renewal. And that will only come, as John, you pointed out, Denny, you pointed out, from spiritual awakening rooted in the Christian worldview. Marriage is good. Children are good. And this is part of the good that God gave and commanded humanity at the beginning in Genesis chapter 1.
That's a great way to end it. Thank you all for listening. For more resources on marriage, sexuality, and gender, visit cbmw.org.